The following is a production of Vanderbilt's Owen Graduate School of Management. For more information about Owen, please visit owen.vanderbilt.edu.
Okay, well, welcome everybody. On behalf of the Distinguished Speaker Series, I'd like to thank you all for attending. Today we have with us Mr. Rob Matucci. Mr. Matucci is a graduate of Owen, MBA class of 1977. He got his start as a brand manager with Procter & Gamble, where he stayed for 27 years. He's been with Evenflow now since July of 2005 and is here to talk about life within a private equity firm and how to maximize shareholder value. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Rob Matucci.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I thought so. Thanks for being here. It's a real pleasure to be back in Nashville. And I was able to tell a few of you that I have a real soft spot in my heart for both Nashville and Owen. Because not only did I earn my MBA here and get an advanced degree on my way to my career, but I also met my wife in Nashville. She is a dental hygienist, and I met her in the dental office. So it's, for those of you that are not yet engaged or married, you never know where you might meet your future spouse. And I have, you know, very fond memories of both my education and my time in Nashville, and have some very dear friends that we still keep in close contact with that were classmates of mine at Owen. So it's fun to be here. I decided to drive down today. It was a beautiful drive through Kentucky and into Tennessee from Cincinnati. Today, we're going to focus on shareholder value. And shareholder value is important for anyone in business, whether you own your own business, whether you're part of a big public corporation like I was at P&G for 27 years. And certainly now in the world of private equity, it is first and foremost, but I guess I would contend that in any of those situations, thinking about increasing shareholder value is part of anybody's set of objectives and needs to be an element of how you're going to move forward in advancing your business. And today we use a bit of a case study looking at Evenflow and how we revitalize the company to bring back and increase shareholder value. I want to start with the end of the story. I believe in results and outcomes. And so in this particular case, we're going to look at the results that were achieved. First, there was a 40% internal rate of return. Three times the invested capital. A 40% reduction in debt. And here, the key is cash generation and cash management. And a 12% increase in net sales and a 45% increase in profit, all in 29 months. That's the end of the story. And we knew that we had achieved that shareholder value because we went through a liquidity event or a company sale. So the market provided the value of Evenflow. It wasn't just something we sat around and made up in our financial offices or among our accountants. This was the true external measure of the value of the company in 29 months. So that's one definition of shareholder value. I'm sure there are others, but the way I think about it is you've got clear metrics, you know where you're going, and it's fully integrated into everything that you do. Just to give you one example of that, our bonus program, and there's lots of different bonus programs at a lot of different companies. First of all, we have more of our compensation at risk. We can go from zero bonus in a year to up to 200% of your target. And there's only two metrics on that bonus matrix. One is your profit, in our case as measured by EBITDA, and the other one is net debt, which of course comes from your ability to generate cash. So we have a matrix, and if we hit our goals of profit and of net debt, we get 100% of our bonus. If we do better on either or both, We get more of our bonus, and if we don't, guess what? And it's a much bigger percentage of my compensation than those in the bonus program than when I was at P&G. I think that's really powerful, because that makes it fully integrated into everything that we do, both in terms of our kind of emotional connection as well as financial connection to the company. Now, in order to get to the end of the story, I'm going to double back a little bit and go through the situation that we faced, the strategy that we put into place, how that was executed via the various plans, and a sneak peek into the future. So let's talk a little bit about the situation. I joined the company almost 3 years ago after 27 years at P&G. I had never been in a privately held firm. And certainly Evenflow, by its size, is a medium-sized company. I was coming from a huge multinational conglomerate, you know, with, at that time, $55 billion worth of sales. Just to give you a sense, Evenflow is about $350 million. But by the way, size doesn't necessarily have an impact on the amount of challenges that one might face. One could argue it might create even more challenges. So I walked into a mid-sized company that was privately held, and what I found was a solid but clearly underperforming and underdeveloped company and brand. This company was not meeting expectations and certainly wasn't meeting its potential. So we're going to get at a little bit of the history, and we're going to look at consumers and influencers. At lunch today, I talked about influencers, and I'm going to elaborate on that in this presentation today. And we're going to talk about our retail partners and our investors. In terms of history, this company, for those of you that don't know, has been around since 1920. It was founded as a pyramid rubber company in Ohio. And I could imagine, although I don't know this for a fact, that it probably had something to do with the automobile industry. And somehow they got into plastics and related materials. But really, it became Evenflow when there was a patented feeding device. And somebody had a very smart idea of using the word flow, and it was going to be even. So in this particular case, the brand name did have a meaning. I worked on other brands like Crest that really doesn't have any meaning. And people can argue for, you know, days on end whether they have to have a meaning or not. I would argue the brands create their reputation. They earn their reputation. They get their image through the kind of products and services they provide. But in this particular case, Evenflow has served us well as a brand name, and it was a patent in 1935. I think that's really when the company started to get off the ground and catch fire in terms of consumer acceptance and sales. Throughout the decades, the product offerings were expanded beyond bottles and nipples into other related and complementary categories for the care of children. And today, the company does have leading market positions in several important categories. You can see here on the left-hand side that we've got number one market positions in activity centers, which we call ExtraSaucer. Somebody here was talking to me about that earlier. This is one of the great products of all time. And it was created by Evenflow marketers and design engineers, you know, something like 15 years ago. Johnny Jump Up is basically the only product like that, and this came through acquisition. In breast pumps, and I'm going to talk later about breast pumps and breastfeeding, we have a leading position at retail mass. Right? Retail mass. That doesn't necessarily mean we are the market leader. In fact, we are not. So there's other market space out there that we need to fill. And we are the leader in gates. We purchased many years ago a company that had wood gates. And then through innovation, we brought metal gates. And those are actually the fastest growing segment of the market today. Number two market positions, a lot in car seats and travel systems and kind of related products. And then we also participate in reusable bottles in other places. While we are certainly not the biggest juvenile products company, we are by far and away the most diverse. We have the broadest product line of any of our competitors, and I think I may be showing you that in a chart later. Consumers. Evenflow focuses on first-time moms. Now, for those of you that are dads, sorry. We don't care. I'm serious about that. I'm a dad. And, of course, I'm exaggerating a little bit to have some fun with this. But what we have found quantitatively and qualitatively and through experience after experience is that who's in charge of the household, who's in charge of the kids? Yeah, everybody knows it. This is universal. It's not just here in Nashville, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt. It's true worldwide. I've had the opportunity to live in Latin America. I've traveled the world. Moms are in charge of the household. It really doesn't make any difference what ethnicity, what income level. They're making the decisions. They're the caretakers. So for those of you that are in marketing, and we have a marketing professor here, you got to know your audience. And that's why I like to kid about we don't care about dad. Because it's to make a point. The most important strategic choices people can make is what you're not going to do. We're not going to worry about dad. We're going to focus on moms. Because moms are so intimately involved in this category. And then we go to first-time moms. Why is that? Why first-time moms versus the experienced mom?
Well, because they're eager. They want to make sure that they get all the best stuff for their baby. That they have to
you got it. What else?
Well, they're buying.
They're buying everything. Now, we do pay attention to experienced moms, and I'm going to talk about them in a different way in a minute. But our primary target audience is first-time moms for all the reasons you've articulated and a few others. But that's a choice. If there's anything I've learned in my professional career, when you're in business, you have to make choices about what you're going to do, do that well, and decide what you're not going to do and leave it alone. The brand has very high brand awareness. Aided awareness is like 97%. Unaided awareness is 50%. That's big. I've worked on big brands at P&G like Pantene and Crest and Head & Shoulders and a whole bunch of other beauty brands. This is very high awareness because it's a high awareness category. But that doesn't guarantee success, by the way. Because lower than average value rates. The value equation, of course, is the intersection between the quality of the product and service and the price that one pays. It doesn't mean it's necessarily the cheapest. Some of the highest priced products in any market are often the highest value rated. And Evenflow's kind of in the low to mid price range. And we've been trying to evolve the company up a little bit into higher prices, but you've got to earn it. So we have a bit of a value problem when I walked in the company and something that we need to overcome. And it is a dated brand image. If you ask my mother, oh, Evenflow, fabulous. If you ask a 22-year-old who's about to have a baby, it's not top of mind like it used to be. That's a problem. So we needed to go work on that. Influencers. We like to think of this as it takes a village to raise a child. And there's lots of ways to think about that, literally and figuratively. But what happens is that first-time mom is getting help and advice from a whole bunch of other people. Could be their neighbor, could be their mother, it could be their pediatrician, their lactation consultant. All those folks are influencing that first-time mom. We need to understand that, and we need to be in a way that we are having a dialogue and an influence on the influencer. It's a very specific business model, and one that is alive and well and kicking in this world. One of our outside consultants, who also happens to be a first-time mom of twins, talks about her board of directors. And her board of directors is just like any business board of directors. Who does she go to when she's trying to get advice on raising her children? Yes, but she's also going online. She happened to have twins, and of course there are all these sites that all they talk about is twins. She doesn't even know some of these people. At least not person to person. But she knows them through these internet sites and blogs and even some phone conferences that they have. So we need to understand mom's board of directors as much as we understand mom, or we're in big trouble. And that's something that the company wasn't doing 2 or 3 years ago. Industry professionals. And I'm going to talk specifically a lot today about breastfeeding. The breastfeeding is taught by the nurse and the lactation consultant in the hospital. And if they don't like EvenFlow, they're going to not only not recommend EvenFlow breast pumps, but they're going to maybe, you know, bash it. Oh, you shouldn't use that. That's not a good product. You should really use Medela because that's in the hospital. And I'm going to talk later about how that actually influenced an acquisition that we made. So this dynamic is alive and kicking and very real, and is something we need to understand, that the industry professionals, and I would argue when you're dealing with kids and safety, remember we make car seats, there's all sorts of industry professionals out there, they're going to talk about which car seats they might want to use. You got to identify those folks, you got to work with them, and then hopefully they will put you on your recommendation list. Retailers. EvenFlow is strong at mass retailers. Walmart, Kmart, Target. And that's in part because of the strategy the company had taken 5 or 6 years ago to focus on top customers. We don't have a big sales force, but where we do have our sales force, they live and work in the same communities as the headquarters of the mass retailers. That's a good idea. That works. And we were growing our business among those mass retailers pretty well over the last couple of years. One big problem. Babies R Us. Toys R Us. A very fast-growing chain that has a lot of influence. They've got the, what do you call them when you sign up to get your baby products? And thank you. They have the registry. Thank you very much. You know, we weren't participating in those registries. Babies R Us wasn't carrying a lot of our products. They had more of an upscale image. This is where our kind of low to medium price products were creating a bit of an issue, a bit of a gap for their shopper. So we needed to figure out how do we bring the EvenFlow products to another level without losing, you don't want to walk away from your core. That's always a challenge. Some of you may have heard the good, better, best strategy in pricing and product availability. EvenFlow is very good at good and better. We need to get more and more into the best arena in order to participate with Baby R Us and other specialty type outlets. Investors. This is a company that's been privately held since 1984. So it's been in this place for a long time now, and longer than many others. In fact, one of the histories, we have somebody here from Venezuela, the company was once owned by the Cisneros family out of Venezuela. And they own everything in Venezuela when I lived there, right? They own the TV station, they own the Coca-Cola bottler, they own the this, they own the that. And how they got into the business of owning EvenFlow and Spalding Sporting Goods, don't ask me. But they did. So it's been privately held for quite a long time. However, the Cisneros sold it to KKR in the early 2000s. And by the way, editorial comment, this is not a judgment against KKR. Obviously, they're a very successful company. But the way they approached EvenFlow was to milk it. They wanted to cut and run. And they brought in a turnaround specialist, right? We all know what that means. So close down plants, you know, fire people, reduce capabilities, get the cost down as low as possible, and then sell it again. And that's exactly what they did. And oh, by the way, if that's their objective, they did it very, very well. Now, to the credit of KKR and the management team at the time, some of those moves were absolutely necessary. The company had gotten a bit fat and happy. Way too many managers. $350 million business, mostly in the United States, about 80% of the business. The rest of it's in Mexico and Canada. How many general managers do you think they had at one time? Just wild guess. Not quite that many. But they had 8. I managed brands at P&G that were bigger than that. You know, it was just too much overhead. They also had 3 or 4 manufacturing plants in the United States. Well, you know, they were in Wisconsin, they were in Georgia, they were in New Jersey. And so they made a smart move, and they shut those down, and they moved half the production over to China. One of the interesting things that they did do that I thought was really smart is that they kept the infant car seat production in Ohio because of the safety focus and making sure that they could keep a close eye on it 20 miles away, you know, from the headquarter offices. So not everything went overseas. And then also we do have on-the-ground operations and a manufacturing facility in Mexico. EvenFlow has been in Mexico for 50 years and a very good facility down there. So the production kind of takes place in Ohio and Mexico, and then just over half of it is in southern China. The problem was those were good structural choices, but they literally kind of wiped out the market research area. They cut way back on marketing and consumer understanding, and they started to, instead of improving products, taking cost out. The whole thing was the cost out era. Everybody familiar with the Snuggly carriers? You know, you can put your child in them. Great brand, the market leader at one time. At one time, what did they do? They cheapened the fabric. Well, what mom or dad, you know, wants to have a cheap fabric? And Infantino and Baby Bjorn and others came out with much more stylish, much softer, you know, started to put bells and whistles into these things, and guess what? EvenFlow lost its market share leadership. That is a shame. You know how hard it is to get market share leadership? If there's anything I learned at P&G, it's you got to have the number one and number two brand. That's when you get scale, that's when you get leverage, that's when you get brand awareness. And we had it and we gave it away. That makes me crazy. And we still don't have it. We're still struggling on Snuggly to get back to market leadership. So, you know, you've got to absolutely protect the clock of General Motors. Right? They let it slip away, and now, you know, Toyota is just kicking their tail. And it's very hard to get back. And as I said, some of the core capabilities. We're talking here about an infant child safety company. How can you lose sight of your customers and your consumers? That is where the mistake was made, not the outsourcing. The outsourcing was absolutely brilliant. Okay, now, I'm going to put up a very simple triangle, and this is our company strategy. I'm not kidding. Obviously, there's documents and data behind it, but this is our company strategy. And I want to talk a little bit about both the strategy and the reason why it's so simply portrayed. But the strategy is we're going to be best for baby. Is everything that we do today the best for baby? No. But that is our mantra. That's our mission. When you're in this category, you've got to set your goals high. Who wouldn't want what's best for baby? But, you know, we're going to continue to strive to do that in everything that we do, every day that we do it. That's a lot different, by the way, than cost out. This is a fundamental shift back to focusing on the consumer. And that's in the middle of the triangle. What makes us as best for baby? How do we know that we're delivering best for baby? We start at the top and then safety. In fact, I would go on to say we want to be the safest and safer. Not only for our mom, but versus competition. Where we have that, guess what? Our market shares are high and our business is growing. Where we don't, there's problems. Safety first. Innovation and performance. In this category with today's moms, ever evolving, much more sophisticated, much more educated, they're getting more information from more people. You got to innovate or you die. And unfortunately, in the early 2000s, some of that innovation stream had been weaned off. And so, as I was explaining a little bit at lunch, we do innovation inside, as well as we also have outside inventors, we have outside design houses. We actually go to our suppliers in China for some of the innovation. And I guess I should say here, it's got to have performance. You can innovate till you're blue in the face, but the car seat isn't easy to install, the wheel falls off the stroller, or one of the snaps doesn't work, mom is going to be very upset. Or even worse, if the breast pump doesn't give the milk at 2 o'clock in the morning it's supposed to, you've lost that consumer forever. So we had some performance issues, because as the company was cutting corners and cutting costs, guess what? Some of those performance measures started. So our returns and our consumer complaints were going up. Not a good thing. So we specifically call out performance here in addition to innovation. And the third element of the triangle is education. First of all, we need to be more educated about the consumers, but also think about that first-time mom. She doesn't know anything. She's confused. She's overwhelmed. She wants to learn it all, you know, like that. Well, the best thing we can do is help her educate in simple ways. I would argue she's getting too much information in too many different ways. And I'll show you later some new packaging that we're about to introduce that is simplifying the whole packaging experience. We've also gone online with things like how do you install a car seat, video so that you can click and you can see this model and this model and this kind of car and actually see how it's done properly. That's what I mean by education. We need to reach out and serve our consumers in a way that she understands how to use our products. You'll notice around it is first-time moms and their influencers. I've talked about first-time moms, and their influencers can be the lactation consultant, it can be their next-door neighbor, it can be their board of directors, it can be lots of people, and it may vary by category. So what we do is our marketing and design teams really need to understand not only who their primary target is, but who their influencers are. And as I'll tell you a little bit more in a minute, our entire marketing plan right now, at least from an advertising standpoint, is online. 100%. No TV, no print. Why do you think it is, by the way, besides the fact that TV is expensive? Why do you think we've made that choice? Yeah?
Probably one of the easier ways to gauge who you're reaching, how many times you're reaching.
Yeah. Got good metrics, right? Yeah?
The linkage between, if you're on, you discussed message boards earlier, that type of thing, somebody can link your product, link your video.
Right.
You know, your scale there is as large.
Exactly right. So we want to be where they are. We want to be where they are, working with them to provide information and education. A lot of our advertising is how-to kind of thing. Kind of like Cosmopolitan, right? They always say, you know, this is how you do a wedding, this is how you do that. This is how-to type of things. This is our strategy, and I've done strategies a million different ways. I've written 15-page documents, you know, with 15 pages of attachments. And don't get me wrong, you've got to do your homework, you've got to have the data, you've got to have the facts. It all exists, or at least most of it. But in the end, what I found is, whether it's a brand or a company, you've got to find simple things it's going to stand for. And this is what we stand for. And then each category has its own strategy. And the other thing I would say about this is when I talk about the company, internally or externally, I talk about those things. And only those things. Over and over and over again. Ad nauseum. Because it takes a while to sink in, it takes a while to internalize it, and to actually make it part of your everyday thing. When we have a recall, I go crazy, mostly because, yes, it's a distraction, yes, it costs us money, but it's anti that strategy. That's why it makes me crazy, more than anything. So that's our strategy, and we spend a lot of time as a management team working our way to this. And of course, we fine-tune it, you know, and we may evolve it over time. But I'm also a believer that strategies need to be somewhat of a long-term mindset. At least 3 years. If you're going to, you know, get out of the quarter-to-quarter reports that you need to give to your board of directors and your investors, you got to think about where you're going at least 3 years and hopefully five. Frankly, to be honest, I have a hard time dealing with 10. Too many things change over 10 years. And I've had a hard time, you know, imagining that kind of possibility. Doesn't mean it can't be done. Doesn't mean there might be some industries in which it might be necessary. But I found that 3 to 5 year horizons are about right for most company and brand strategies. Okay, so the implementation of the strategy. It's wonderful to have a nice triangle. It's pretty simple. We've got things all over the company, you know, boards, it's on our website, it's on our packaging, you know, all those kinds of things from a branding standpoint, which are important. But if there's anything I learned the hard way, as somebody who grew up in brand management, who then moved into general management and senior management, is you got to have operational discipline. You get what you measure. You have systems and procedures that you absolutely need to follow. Any company of any size has to have that discipline. And we lack some of that, and we've certainly made major steps to improve it. We need to re-engineer our global supply and manufacturing system. What was interesting about what KKR did is they moved, you know, over half of the supply chain to China. There's only one minor detail they left out. It was all based on price and price alone. So I got this thing. I want it produced. They go out and get three bids. Whoever came with the lowest price was the winner. Next time, it could move to the next guy. There was no continuity, there was no ownership, there was no partnership, and really, you know, other than price, there was no system. We've changed all that. We've gone to fewer suppliers and better partners, who then understand our procedures, we train them on that, we hold them accountable to that. They get a scorecard every month, they're rated on a numerical basis, And then, of course, it's red, yellow, green. And if it's in the red or yellow, they have to take, you know, steps in order to improve their productivity or their quality or their delivery or whatever it may be, or they're going to lose business. So we re-engineered the global supply chain to get fewer suppliers who were better partners. Attract and retain top talent. You might be thinking, duh. Well, it isn't as easy as it seems, especially when you're in Dayton, Ohio. Not kidding. I grew up in Cincinnati. I know Southwest Ohio. You know, it's not Chicago. It's not New York. It's not, you know, the Sun Belt. And it's not P&G. Recruiting P&G was pretty easy. But not so at Evenflow. So we needed to go out and, you know, market the company. And one of the first things I had to do was go out and replace two of my top team managers, because they just weren't at the level that I needed them to be. And I spent 9 months recruiting a global vice president of operations, and another 6 to 9 months recruiting a vice president of our North American business. Thank goodness, you know, and we got great talent. And then they've been able to attract other talent. The retention part of it is also important. Continuity and training and development. There wasn't a lot of training and development going on. When it's cut and run, what do you need to train? The CEO at the time knew he wasn't going to be there more than 2 years, so what does he care about training? That's why your strategy has to be at least 3 to 5 years, because you're developing your organization as well as developing your business plan. Rebuild the core capabilities of consumer understanding and marketing, and continue to look at strategic acquisitions and alliances, which we've done, and I'll talk more about here in a minute. The plan. Those are the core strategies that the team came to within the Best for Baby strategy. The plan was extensive consumer understanding and research. We had to get back to that, quantitatively and qualitatively. And I'm not talking about focus groups. By the way, I hate focus groups. Why? Why do I hate focus groups? I've been to thousands of them. Anybody take a guess?
Skew it any way you want.
Yeah, that's a very good reason. You hear what you want to hear. You get one big mouth in the group, and you know she dominates the entire conversation. You think you've got all the answers. Most people that listen in focus groups listen for what they want to hear. So they've got a hypothesis, and they say, oh, look, Susie liked that. That's not research. That's misleading. The only thing that focus groups are good for is to create hypotheses. You listen to the consumers and you get some input and you say, oh, I need to go learn more about that. I learned this in the world of beauty care, which I work with in P&G, and it's really not much different. You think about mom. She's a very complex person. If you're up here at the superficial level and you think you've understood her here, you totally missed it. You got to get underneath and understand what her fears are and her concerns are and how she views, you know, how she makes decisions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that takes hours and days and months of, you know, working with. I find, you know, some of the best things are you get a panel of women who are moms or about to be moms or whatever, and you keep going back to them, the same women over and over and over again. That way you get to know them. They feel part of the solution. They'll give you very honest feedback. We have a thing where, you know, a first-time mom has a child, we'll say, okay, we're going to give you a series of Evenflow products over the next 2 years, and all we want from you is feedback. Honest feedback. You get pages of stuff. We have this really wonderful new product, which I might show later, called an ExerSaucer Triple Funnel. And it converts from a stationary activity center, which is what it was designed for, and it converts into an S-shaped activity table. So when the child gets older and is able a little more mobile, it extends the use, and it really is a wonderful thing. One problem. As we got feedback from these moms that we sent product to early on, the conversion wasn't so simple to do. Way too long of a process. The instructions were too complicated. That's a problem. That is an issue. So, you know, you get that relationship with the moms, and that's when you really get in-depth consumer understanding. New mom-focused advertising, once we understood that she was online, and she was getting information from her board of directors and other people. We were speaking to her in her language. I'll show you some. some new easy-to-shop packaging. When I walked into this category, it was the most pitifully executed packaging I think I've ever seen in any category. Just a bunch of words, no clarity of communication, no priority of communication, and this was true for us and our competition. So I saw an opportunity not only to help them with Evenflow, but to stand out versus the competition. And I'll show you what we did here in a minute. The point about the PR is that having other people speak on the company's behalf, using research to have a pediatrician talk about the accidents that happen with walkers and then use Exercise as a stationary activity center. Partnering up with American Inventor, which was just about invention and innovation. Remember we said we're going to be about innovation? So associating ourselves with the show and with somebody that came with a car seat and then working with them for a year really helped our credibility and our knowledge in this industry. So PR can be a powerful tool if you know your strategy. There's a very clear strategy behind each one of those choices. I talked earlier about needing to trade up some of our products. I'm not going to take time here in the interest of time, but here's the Triple Fun, which was a more expensive, extra saucer. We've upgraded our play yards and our car seats and our strollers, and we were able to get into Babies R Us very effectively and actually had a very good year with them in 2007 and more to come in 2008. This is our online banners, and it has both a little bit of sense of humor as well as the voice of mom. So this was all done in the spirit of the voice of mom and really, having them interact. And then if we had a new product, we'd have mom demonstrate it, maybe show some videos and other things. Plus, we upped the image, right? It's a lot more contemporary, more colorful. And everything at the bottom says Evenflow, best for baby. This is hard to see, but over here on the right-hand side is an example of our new packaging. If you go into the store now and you see everything in that kind of blue and orange, I'm not sure we're a fan, but these are colors that stood out. But the most important thing besides the branding and the colors is that on every single package, whether it's a car seat, a feeding bottle, it doesn't really matter, it's going to have on the upper right-hand corner, who's it for, down here in the circle, what is it, and then a little visual description of how to use it. Who's it for? What is it, and how to use it in very simple, symbolic terminology. Very clean, very simple, not to mention it's much better branding. We tested this in consumer research, both out of store and in store. We actually went to Babies R Us and did research there. 2-1 winner over current and versus competition. And we're rolling it out now. It took us a year to kind of get this packaging qualified and ready to go, and it's a big investment. We are spending more money on our packaging. But there's a reason for it. And it goes back to our strategy. Make the choice for consumers easier, do better branding, and create a stronger relationship with moms. So we're very excited about that initiative. Organizational development. I talk about the organization. We really needed to upgrade our talent, and we needed to train the people that were there. They had no training plans. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it was true. And now we have a very disciplined training program. We went out and hired an organizational development person to do supplemental training, and we've held our managers much more accountable for the development of their people. That's on their rating form just as much as their business results. I talked earlier about the supply chain and manufacturing. Now, the future, when we got those results that I put up earlier, that was a result of a sale to yet another private equity firm. And that took place during the period of 2006. We closed in early 2007 and achieved that kind of shareholder return. They're called Weston Presidio. They're based out of Boston. And then, just 2 weeks ago, we closed on the largest acquisition in the company's history. Within 1 year of new ownership. And this is to get us in the institutional or hospital market into breast pumps and breastfeeding with a brand called Amita. So here we now have firsthand relationships with nurses and lactation consultants, and those are the ones, who are influencing the purchase. We're going to take the Amita brand once we're ready and bring it into retail. So we'll have both at the institutional level and at the retail level which should also help us accelerate our return on this investment. And we're going to work with the lactation community, and I don't have time to get into this right now, to become compliant with the World Health Organization code for breastfeeding products so that the lactation community and the WHO community will look at EvenFlow in a more favorable way. Trust me, this is painful. It takes a lot of effort, and there's a lot of this stuff that, you know, is a bit off the top, but this is a strategy because we know we got to influence the influencers. That's the only reason we're doing it. So we're very much investing in the breastfeeding. We also licensed the technology. This is where we went to outside licensing. And we have about ready to introduce a hands-free breast pump that a woman can put underneath her bra and not be tied to a machine. And all the concept testing and all the product testing on this has been very powerful. So you can see that as a feeding company, we're also getting much bigger into breastfeeding at retail and in the hospitals. So for the future, we're going to continue to build on what's working. It's always important to identify. I've focused on the outages here, but there are a lot of good things about EvenFlow, and there have been a lot of good things well before I got there. You want to make sure you build on those, but also address the outages and be very objective about it. What's shareholder value? It's increasing your sales and profit while generating cash to reduce debt. If there's another thing that I learned kind of the hard way is how important cash is. I've heard the P&G CEO say cash is king. So that means reducing inventories. It means improving your accounts payable and accounts receivable. All those things you learn in accounting that sound boring, trust me, they matter. It really does help your sufficiency of your company. When we made this acquisition, we were able to use cash, not all of it. We also had some additional equity infusion, but we used some of the company cash to pay for it, and we didn't take on any new debt. So that was important, you know, for us in order to make that decision, because we were reasonably highly leveraged to begin with. Be objective about the company's strategies and weaknesses and plan accordingly. Understand the consumer and customer needs and work to execute them. Build a strong team and facilitate and embrace change. I guess that's kind of my parting thought, which is change is inevitable. Don't pretend it doesn't exist and get out front of it as much as possible. In the world of infant products and moms, the moms are changing every day, and the internet and access to the world community is only accelerating all of that. So that's the EvenFlow story. I'm happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Got one. So how much would you say, you seem to have a good goal and strategy and vision for EvenFlow. How much of that is something that you have derived, you and your management team, and how much has been influenced by, your owners?
That's a great question. I want to start the answer to that question saying not all private equity firms are created the same. I've only worked with two. I've been very fortunate that our private equity owners are very much of the belief that they want to recruit and retain a top management team and let them run the business, assuming, this is a big assumption, and counting on the fact that you will deliver your goals. It's always easier to have, flexibility in how you operate your strategy and your plans when you're delivering your goals. So in our case, it's really been the management team and I. And we have, asked ourselves, where do we want to be when we grow up and how are we going to get there? And we've made the business interventions and the structural and procedural interventions that we think will help us, get to a much bigger business in the next 3 to 5 years. From what I understand, there are some private equity firms that want to be very, very involved and kind of mandate how this is done. I'd have a hard time working there, and they'd have a hard time putting up with me. So I think you need to, if you're going to get into that world, like any other company, you need to understand their culture. You need to understand their management approach. But our two private equity firms that I've had the fortune of working with have been very supportive of the long term. And that's another thing. They're not just looking to sell or liquidate the thing within a year or two. There's at least a 3 to 5 year horizon, which gives you the time to then create and execute those kind of plans. And we certainly would not have made an acquisition the largest in company history if what we're trying to do is get out of this path. Yeah?
You said that the people that you newly hired are giving you something that your old managers couldn't. What is that?
Leadership. I hate to be so generic about it, but if there's anything that distinguishes talented managers, it's leadership. What I mean by that is that they're willing to take on tough challenges and not kind of, you know, point fingers that it's somebody else's problem. And then, of course, they bring ideas and they bring others into the solution. We were just lacking leadership. It was too much. There was way too much, you know, R&D didn't do their thing and finance didn't do that. And I just can't tolerate that. That's not leadership, especially among the leadership team. So I recruited people that had demonstrated, and when I was recruiting, that was the number one, the number two, and the number three criteria. What have they done to lead? Yes, ma'am.
Well, what does Eaton Plug do in the area of sustainability, green, recycling, all that packaging you just produced?
That's a great question, and I'm going to be very frank about it. We are certainly not in the lead on this. The leadership is coming from Walmart. You haven't heard about that or seen it. Walmart, for lots of reasons, has made sustainability environmentally friendly a corporate platform, and I give them credit. They're really doing it. And now they're holding their suppliers accountable to it. So starting this month, we now have a packaging sustainability scorecard. You get what you measure, no different here, so we've got all those things. When we did this new packaging, we definitely took some steps in some of the materials in terms of the you know, recycled materials and different kinds of inks and other things. And we're looking actually at a different execution on our car seats that might go even further. I think this is one of the current realities of any business. You're going to have to deal with, you know, environmental sustainability and recyclability and reusing materials and all those kinds of things, whether it be in the juvenile space or any space. It's no longer a fad. I will say that we choicefully didn't take the lead. This is where we'd rather be a fast follower. We don't really have the reach and all the knowledge and capabilities to lead this. But we're going to have to stay on top of it, otherwise we're going to lose market share.
Given the issues that companies like Mattel have with constructing children's frames overseas, does that cause you to change any of your partnerships or change processes or anything here in the last?
The latter, but not the former. That question was asked at lunch as well, and I said the problem is not China. I really believe that. The problem is the manufacturer, which happens to be the company with the brand. You know, we've got a dozen, you know, supplier partners in southern China, and they're every bit as good, if not better, as some manufacturers and assemblers in the United States. The key is the processes and making sure that you have the quality standards identified, and then all the way through the supply chain, all the way back to the tertiary and, you know, the 10th guy down the line to make sure. So we have upped the standards, we've upped the amount of inspection and controls, and we are definitely holding them accountable. It's also become kind of a political issue within China, so actually the Chinese government has inserted itself, and not necessarily for the better, because now they feel like they have to do all these inspections, which is duplicating, slowing things down, costing more money, but that's what happens. But yes, you better believe it, and safety, you know, if that's at the top of our triangle, we got to practice what we preach.
All right, well, we're out of time. Please,
yep.
Join me in.